was young with God on its side. Oh, the Spanish American.
Well, it's Monday night. It's 8 o'clock. It's the Women's Show. And boy, do we have an exciting show for you this evening. My name is Peggy Bean, and I'm here in the studio with Catherine Allen, another Women's Collective member. And we have two very exciting guests with us this evening. We have Maggie Coulter from Sacramento Peace Action and Mary Wind from Teach Peace in Davis. We're going to be discussing this evening about the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. And we know that this is a very controversial subject, and later on tonight we'd like to take your questions, and if you could call us in, that would be great. Mary Wind has been working on issues like this for a long time, and she's a board member of Teach Peace in Davis, and she recently spent some time in the Middle East visiting Jerusalem, West Bank, and Gaza during a three-week trip last summer. And Maggie also was there. She returned in June from 8 months in the Middle East, six of those living in the West Bank and a week visiting Gaza. And they both are working for the Davis Committee for Palestinian Rights to have the Davis Co-op honor the international boycott against Israel until Israel complies with international law and stops violating the rights of Palestinian people. So with that, I'd like to take it to Maggie. Maggie's going to talk a little bit about what she'll cover this evening in our show.
Great. Thank you, Peggy. I'm glad to be here. I'm sure Mary is as well.
Delighted.
What we'd like to do this evening is to provide the listeners with a little bit of a historical interview or overview, sorry, historical overview of the situation, because this situation, like all of these complicated foreign policy issues, the history is extremely important, and it's important to understand that. Then we will talk about what life is like today in the West Bank and Gaza, and both Mary and I have been there recently. And we'll talk about some of the activism going on, both Israeli peace activists, who we both met and worked with when we were in the West Bank and Gaza, as well as Palestinian activists and places where Palestinians and Israelis are working together to bring justice to this area. We'll also be talking about our local activism with the Davis Committee for Palestinian Rights and our BDS campaign at the Davis Food Co-op, which has become quite a controversial issue, so we'll talk about that. And we'll be announcing some upcoming events, as well as talking about what people can do and hopefully answering people's questions when they call in. So with that, I guess I'll start with a little bit of a historical overview. This is a little different for me. I've been giving talks with PowerPoint. I think I've given a couple dozen talks, and so now I'm going to have to do this without my slides. But it's really important in understanding what's going on today in Palestine, Israel, understanding the historical context. And what we have today is a result of colonialism, and it's not too different from colonialism that we've seen in other places around the world, like this country or South Africa or Latin America. In the case of historic Palestine, which includes all of what is today the State of Israel, this is actually an area in history that's had, where the history goes back 100,000 years, people have been in this area, and there have been many groups have gone through and conquered. Many of the surrounding countries had come in, the Romans, the Phoenicians, the Israelite tribes, lots of other groups have been through historic Palestine. In about 6,000 years ago, people in this area started to form agriculture and began to form cities, and we had the Canaanites civilization developing, and the Canaanites are the ancestors of today's Palestinians, basically. Again, we had this series of conquerors, the final one being at the end of the 1800s was the Ottoman Empire. And they were ousted in World War One by the British. And it's the World War One piece is pretty important in Palestine. Just prior to that, you had a movement in Europe of European Zionists. So these were Europeans who were Jews, and in response to the discrimination against them and the pogroms in Russia and Eastern Europe, which were terrible, some of them wanted to go out and find their own country and build a place that was for Jews only. And they looked at different areas. They looked at a place in South America. They looked at a place in Africa. And they looked at Palestine. Well, this group, which was a minority at the time, the Zionists, had a congress in the late 1800s and decided, okay, we're going to pick Palestine and we're going to develop this as a homeland exclusively for Jews. So they sent a couple of Austrian rabbis to check it out. And the two rabbis telegraphed back and they said, "The bride is beautiful, but she is married to another man." Meaning the country was beautiful and there were other people there. And that's the story that we know about colonialism. When Europeans came to this country, there were people here, and of course they considered them to be subhuman and persecuted them pretty heavily and wiped most of them out. So you had this project, colonial project, that began in the late 1800s and slowly at first. Then during World War One, it really got a big push. What happened then, and I'm going to speed up the history here, so don't worry about that, but just this foundation is important. The British, who we know were in the empire business, they wanted the Arab tribes, the Arabs, to help them fight against the Turks. So they told the Arabs, "Hey, you help us, we'll give you independence." Then this group of Zionists, for the British, they offered the potentiality of having a colony in the Middle East, and they said to them, "Okay, you guys, we'll give you a colony. We'll give you your homeland in Palestine." And behind closed doors with the French, they divided up the whole area between the two of them. So World War One ended. The British got Palestine. They let the Zionists continue to colonize the area. And like colonists here, the Zionists built up their military and their forces. And as they got to the end of World War II, they were ready to kick the British out, just like you think about this country's history. And of course, in the intervening years there, you had the horrible Holocaust in Nazi Germany, in which political activists and Jewish people and gay people and the Roma were all massacred. The estimates of 13 million people, 6 million of whom were Jews from Germany and other countries. So at the end of World War II, the Brits, who had controlled Palestine, said, "You know, we're getting out of the empire business." And they got out of India, and they found these Zionists were pretty well armed, and they were fighting against the British and actually carrying out attacks on British soldiers. So the Brits said, "Okay, we're getting out of Palestine." And the British turned it over to the United Nations and said, "Okay, you guys figure it out." And the United Nations came up with a plan to divide it between the Zionists and the Arabs, the Palestinians. At that point, the Zionists had about 6% of the land, and the rest of it, of course, belonged to the Palestinians. But the UN didn't really take that into consideration. They decided they would give over half of it to the Zionists and the rest to the Palestinians. Now, mind you, the land didn't belong to the United Nations, but they decided to do that anyway. That division was not acceptable to either the Zionists or you know, understandably, the Palestinians. Fighting broke out, and we have, in 1947 and 1948, massive ethnic cleansing of what is today the State of Israel, in which 750,000 to 800,000 Palestinians were driven out of their villages and their homes, and they became refugees in the neighboring countries. There were about 530 villages. They were destroyed or they were occupied then by the colonists, and these refugees were forced out. Well, shortly thereafter, The Zionists declared themselves the State of Israel in May of 1948. And in December of 1948, the United Nations, perhaps realizing the mistake that they had made earlier, said, oops, acknowledged that the Palestinians did have a right to return, that all those refugees had a right to come back to their homes and villages, which, of course, made sense. They had just been forced out by these militias and that they had a right to come back. That is known today as the right of return for Palestinians, and that's United Nations Resolution 194. So we had then this colonialist project in which increasing number of mostly European Jews came into Palestine. By the end of World War II, almost half a million had come. And since then, after the formation of the State of Israel, more and more came. They'd forced the Palestinians out of what was then defined as the State of Israel. It's interesting, Israel's never declared its boundaries, actually, and it doesn't have a constitution either. And in fact, the Zionist project is that all of historic Palestine belongs to the Jewish state. So that would include the Gaza and the West Bank and the Golan. But at the time that Israel was founded in 1948, the West Bank, which is called the West Bank because it's the West Bank of the Jordan River, was part of Jordan, and the Gaza Strip was part of Egypt, and the Golan Heights was Syrians, and there was also part of southern Lebanon. In 1967, this colonialism continuing, Israel attacked all of the neighboring countries, and it began its occupation of the West Bank, the Golan Heights, part of southern Lebanon, Gaza, and the Sinai Peninsula. And since then, we know it's given the Sinai back. But almost immediately after it acquired this territory in 1967, Israel began building illegal colonies in the West Bank and in Gaza. And I say these are illegal because they're a violation of the Geneva Conventions, which prohibit an occupying power from transferring its population into the land that it occupies. Again, Israel began building those settlements almost immediately in both Gaza and the West Bank and in the Golan. And today, the Israeli illegal settlements, their bypass roads, their military bases take up about 45% of the West Bank. So that's the situation that we, Mary and I, came into, where the West Bank is under military occupation. And
if I could just break in there really quickly, Maggie, because we have to thank our underwriters for the upcoming hour of the Women's Show. And this is the Women's Show. My name is Peggy Bean, and we're in the studio with Maggie Coulter from SAC Peace Action and Mary Wind from Davis Teach Peace Organization. And I'd like to thank OhmSoft Technologies, a local internet service provider focused on customer privacy. OhmSoft donates a portion of proceeds to the Davis Community Network, providing internet and web resources to nonprofit community groups throughout Leola County. You can find information about them at dcn.org. And also, we'd like to thank Whitewater Naturopathic Medicine, providing natural health care for the whole family. Licensed naturopathic doctors specialize in natural medicine and offer complementary and alternative therapies. Whitewater Naturopathic is on East Main Street in Grass Valley. WhitewaterNaturopathic.com or 530-271-7123. And we'd always like to thank our listeners out there. And we are talking about the Palestinian-Israeli conflict tonight and the actions that Sacramento Peace Action and Davis Teach Peace are doing in their communities. So, okay.
Okay. Hi, I'm Mary Wind, and I'm with the, I consider myself with the Committee for Palestinian Rights within Davis, but I'm also with the Teach Peace Foundation as a board member. I got involved, I guess it was late last December, it seems like eons ago, when I had the opportunity to go to Israel and the West Bank and to Gaza. And that had that opportunity brought me the chance to see Gaza after what is considered the Great Siege that occurred from December 27th of last year, actually it was just in July that I went, I apologize, December 27th of 2008 to January 25th of, to January, to, forgive me, December 27th of 2008 to January 17th of 2009 is when the Gaza, attack of Gaza took place. And during that time, an enormous number of people were killed. 1,400 Palestinians were killed, and over 4,000 buildings were destroyed, 20,000 severely damaged, 50,000 Gazans were homeless, 400,000 without drinking water. The list goes on and on. The important thing is to share, I think, basically, and I'll get into that in more detail later, what the impact was on me, other than to say that once I went there back in earlier this year, well, last year, every year seems to pass by, as you can tell, I haven't been able to take my mind off of what I saw when I was in Gaza and the West Bank, in particular in Gaza. I'm 62 years old, and I've been to various countries in Europe, and I've been to Liberia and Africa. But when I arrived in Gaza, which was late at night, we only had 24 hours there, which perhaps later I'll be able to explain more about, it was pitch dark. And it was in the morning that I first saw the impact of that three-week attack. And when I got out, when I walked out of the hotel, we happened to be lucky enough to stay in. There were 150 Americans that went on this journey to Gaza for medical relief as a result of what had occurred. I went on a bus, and I was driven to the coast. And when I got out, and actually I was very near the UN school that had been bombed, one of the first bombings that I think we saw in the United States as a result of the siege was the school, and it had been attacked by with white phosphorus bombs. White phosphorus is a bomb that when it disrupts and hits the air and hits a human being, basically, it looks rather pretty in the sky, honestly. It's a little bit like the 4th of July, and it was ironic that I was actually there in that time of year. But when it touches the skin, it literally burns down to the bone. And so, and white phosphorus is definitely, as one might think, illegal as far as the UN resolutions are concerned, even in the state of war, which this was not. This at best could be called a border dispute. That's at best. But after returning from what I saw there of the results, and it reminded me, the reason I referred to my age was, it reminded me to when I was in school and I had opened the books with regard to World War II and had seen the pictures of Dresden after the war. And that was, basically it was just completely rubble. And that's exactly what I saw, was rubble. Now, as I said, I'll get into that a bit more later, perhaps. But one of the things we want to do is we want to get to the present situation that's actually occurring right now in the West Bank as well as here in Davis, California. So in the West Bank, again, it's an area where, as Maggie was beginning to say, everywhere one turns, practically, it's as if there is a settlement. And as a matter of fact, I think as far as the amount of land covered, it's over 45% of the West Bank. But now remember that the West Bank was supposedly for the Palestinians or for the Arabs, and yet they're already inhabiting 45% of the land. And a settlement, to what we want to keep in mind about a settlement is that once an Israeli sets foot on Arab land, the what they call the IDF, but basically that's the Jewish military, which are most often young men and women Their responsibility is to protect the Israeli. So even though they're on Arab land, where an Arab farmer may have been farming his olive trees and so forth for hundreds of years, and a number of the olives literally take 10 years and more, and some of them, the older the olive tree, the better the olive. Once they start to build any kind of a housing of their own, they are under the protection of the military, and as such, if any occurrence takes place between the settler and the Arab, then the military is there to protect the settler, not to protect both parties, which we saw again and again when we were even there, and Maggie will be able to tell you more about what occurred in that case. What's happening as a result of both my experiences in the West Bank and Gaza and Maggie's as well is that in the city of Davis, a group of us have felt the urgency to wake up the city and begin to make them more familiar with what's taking place in Palestine and Israel, because having been raised in the United States, we ourselves know that many people don't actually know what's going on in different parts of the world. We only know what is told us by the media, and the media doesn't tell us a great deal. And so what we started was the Committee for Palestinian Rights, and we united ourselves with the what's called the BDS movement, and that's the boycott,
divestment, and sanctions.
Thank you very much. So you go on a little bit more about the specifics of this, Maggie, because I know you do details even better than I do by far.
Well, the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement arose from actually Palestinian society in 2005, civil society, who said, you know, we need a nonviolent tool to end the occupation, to restore our rights. And they looked around historically and, of course, saw what had happened with the boycott in South Africa and how, you know, a very key part of ending apartheid in South Africa was the boycott, the international boycott and divestment in South Africa. So they called upon their, you know, brothers and sisters around the world to boycott, to not buy Israeli goods, to divest from Israeli companies. And the boycott, which is really taken off since the horrors of Gaza, which Mary described, has been extremely effective in Europe, where you've got banks divesting from Israeli companies, and it's pretty small here what we're doing, although it's growing in the United States, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But the boycott, divestment, and sanctions campaign, and it's actually even growing within Israel, where there's a thing called boycott from within, and these are Israeli activists who are saying, you know, the means that we've got to stop the occupation, we've got to stop the, you know, persecution of Palestinians, and are joining with Palestinians and internationals in this call. And we'll talk a little bit about Israeli activism also. But I want to just mention there are 3 points to the BDS movement. And the first is that the occupation must end, that the military occupation of the West Bank, of the Golan Heights, the siege on Gaza. I mean, Gaza is locked up by the Israeli military. When I was in Gaza, the Gaza fishermen, and it happens still today, they would go out to go fishing and the Israeli Navy would shoot at their boats. And the Gaza farmers couldn't go out into their fields that were near the borders because the Israeli army would shoot at them. And Gaza it's a ghetto. It's an open air prison that's being choked by Israel. So the BDS calls for an end to that siege, an end to the occupation, for is in the first instance. Secondly, it calls for those Palestinians who hold Israeli citizenship, and about 20% of the Israeli population are Palestinians, for them to have equal rights with Jewish Israelis. And they today do not have equal rights. They don't have equal rights, access to the land. They don't get their communities are locked up and not able to develop in the same way. They don't get the same funding for schools. they are discriminated against. It's interesting, in 1961, a former South African president who was visiting Israel, and this is before the 1967 invasion, at that time said Israel's an apartheid state. And in fact, inside Israel is an apartheid state. And then the third point of the BDS movement is getting back to the tragedy that happened in 47, 48, where those Palestinians were kicked out from their homes and lands. And so the third point is that those refugees, in fact, their right to return is honored and respected and implemented. We do want to mention that we've got some upcoming education events, which are really critical. This show is part of that. I do a lot of speaking. Mary does a lot of speaking. But actually this week, for those listeners who are in the Davis neck of the woods, this Thursday at 7 o'clock, we are showing the film, The Iron Wall, at the Dos Pinos Housing Cooperative in Davis, which is at 2550 Sycamore Lane. And it's open to the public. We invite people to come, and we'll also be talking about our effort in Davis, which I'll let Mary say a little bit more about. And then I do want to also have people put on their calendar March 7th. We are very fortunate to have Omar Barghouti, who's one of the founders of the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanction BDS movement, Palestinian debating in Davis, and he's going to debate Israeli professor Zev Mose at the Veterans Memorial on Sunday, March 7th at 7 o'clock. And that's going to be an excellent opportunity for people to hear two people really seriously talk about the issues that we've raised in our campaign and that are being raised around the world.
What's been happening in Davis right now is that, as I said before, this group, Davis Committee for Palestinian Rights, a number of us are members of the Davis Food Co-op. And the Davis Food Co-op has a series of policies with regard to members and their opportunity to bring before the board of the co-op, or their shareholders, to bring before the board of the co-op recommendations with regard to what they might purchase and how they might work the organization itself. Now, these are recommendations so that the board has the ultimate decision power. What's been interesting is that we brought, and there's a process that we had to go through in order to bring this before the board. First of all, we attempted to work with the board itself. They could have unanimously, if they had agreed as such, and there's 8 to 9 members, they could have decided to bring in the spring of this year, there is a ballot, an election, so that members can make decisions about issues such as what we brought before them, and I'll explain that in a moment. And once they vote on that decision, and there are approximately 10,300 shareholders of the Davis Co-op out of a city of 60,000 people, once they make it once they get the vote, and the vote, if it's a majority, then that recommendation is taken to the board. What we had asked to be taken to the board was, we were recommending, as believers in the BDS movement, that we place before the board and before basically the shareholders the opportunity to vote on whether or not we, as shareholders, would recommend to the Davis Co-op board that they take part in the international BDS movement, Boycott, Divestment, and Sanction movement. There are approximately 8-9 different products that the co-op now buys through Israel, and as a result of this initiative, if it were to pass and the board were to select to go along with the decision of the spring ballot, then they would remove those items from the shelves of the co-op, and they would agree to purchase no other items from Israel. They would also agree to divest any funds, if they had any funds, in Israeli companies and organizations. What we have found most fascinating is that in the process that's required to even bring an issue of recommendation to the board, we were required to get 5% of the members of the co-op to sign a petition. We have over 640 signatures. We have been in close contact with the board and the staff at the Davis Co-op. And as we acquired those signatures, we asked them to validate them. They chose not to validate the signatures, and for a great length of time, almost 2 months, they wouldn't really tell us exactly the number of shareholders that existed in the co-op. We found this rather intriguing. Well, ultimately, we heard from the board. We received a notification that a lawyer had informed them that as a result of a law within commerce, a national commerce law, they would not be allowed to even put the resolution on the spring ballot, saying to the effect that you cannot forbid the purchase of items from Israel. Now, what's interesting as well is that the law they're referring to, one, is no longer in existence. Two, the law had to do with Arab countries being forbidden from purchasing potentially items from Israel. In essence, it had to do with nation states. It did not have to do with local peace organizations that were making a point. So we went as a group to the National Lawyers Guild and asked for them to review the what we understood to be the concern of the boards and the lawyer. Now, we never got an actual written briefing from the board as to what this was. We were only informed in writing, basically a reference to the stipulation, but not an actual from a lawyer. We weren't even given the name of the lawyer involved initially. So the National Lawyers Guild came back and wrote a letter to the board for us stating that the particular section, one, the law didn't know was no longer applicable, and two, I mean, no longer existed, and two, even if it still did, it would not be applicable. We have submitted that to the board. We have asked them, in the meantime, to, under the circumstance that they still claim that they have a legal review that says that, it, you know, they can't put it on the ballot, we've said, okay, then the least you can do is, because we have the required number of signatures, we stood before the co-op and got all the names that were requested of you, of us, for you, that the least you can do is put it on the ballot with a stipulation, or the proviso, that basically it would not take effect if passed until the legal issues were cleared up. Now, we submitted that to the board, I think approximately, Maggie, was it 2 days ago or three?
Yeah, at the end of last week.
The end of last week. We have heard nothing back, and we have a great concern that we may hear nothing back. Maggie, why don't you fill in a bit more there if you can see any additional pieces of information.
If I can interrupt you for a second, Maggie, we need to do two public service announcements.
Great.
Part of KVMR's community service. I'd like to say the Celtic harpist and storyteller Chris Caswell returns to the Auburn House concerts on Saturday, March 6th at 7 p.m. Reservations are required. Chris will also hold two workshops in the afternoon. For more information, see auburnhouseconcerts.org. Then at the JB's Lounge at the Red Lion Inn in Sacramento, there's going to be a great show on Friday, February the 26th. Ray Obito and the Urban Latin Jazz is happening at the Red Lion at Arbonne in Sacramento. And this is KVMR FM 89.5 in Nevada City. This is the Women's Show, and my name is Peggy Bean, and I'm here with Catherine Allen from the Women's Collective. And we are listening to two very active activists from Sacramento and Davis. We have Mary Wynn from Teach Peace in Davis and Maggie Coulter from the Sacramento Peace Action. So thank you.
Thank you, and we're very happy to be here. So just to recap on where we are, as Mary described in Davis, is we have, in fact, gathered the number of signatures to put this resolution before a vote of the shareholders. The Davis Food Co-op is alleging that their attorney says it's illegal. They won't give us the opinion of their attorney. We, on the other hand, have been very open with them and given them the brief, extensive brief of the National Lawyers Guild that says that these boycotts are not illegal. And I just want to footnote what Mary said. The law has expired. It was, however, extended by executive order the last time by George Bush. So it hasn't been extended under the current administration, and there's a question as to how much it actually can be extended anyway. So the law itself is in question, and the applicability of that law to these homegrown, what they are, home-initiated boycott campaigns appears to be nil. In other words, that the law is not applicable to them. The piece here that a couple pieces that we really want to stress, one is you know, at this point the democracy issue of our co-op really is at stake, because the co-op has had a procedure by which the shareholders can have these initiatives, and our co-op has a proud history of participating in human rights based boycotts. It participated in the farm worker boycott, which we all, remember, with the lettuce and the grapes, and it participated in the South Africa boycott, and it participated in the Coors boycott and the Nestle's boycotts, all human rights-driven boycotts, and that's exactly what ours is. Our boycott is about restoring and protecting the rights of the Palestinian people, and we're really out there because our government continues to give $3 billion of our tax money every year to continue the illegal military occupation of the West Bank, and it's killing Palestinians. I do want to mention that while I was in Palestine, I did do a lot of traveling and met other activists, and some of those activists are dead now or killed by the Israeli military. And a number of them have been in prison. And when Palestinians go into Israeli prison, they're pretty much universally tortured. So it's a pretty horrific situation. I just want to mention, I got an email the other day. The community that I lived in when I was living in the West Bank, Beit Zahur, which is, well, maybe somewhat like Davis, not exactly, but small community. There's an area of land which Israeli settlers, which belongs to the community, but which Israeli settlers, who actually are religious fanatics, but they're backed by the Israeli military, they're claiming it's theirs. So the people of the town were out in this area of land where they've been building a park and have plans, because it's part of their community, to build other projects. They were out there last Sunday, yesterday, holding a mass. Elderly men, women, children, adults, all kinds of people are out there, and they were attacked by the Israeli military. So I just want listeners to imagine in your own communities being invaded and attacked by a military that can come in at any point. And I think Mary's going to read something here.
Yes, what I want to read to you is a sort of, I guess, a poem. And I have a few I want to read this evening, because I think they express more clearly what I can't say adequately. And this is called I Have No Problem, and it's by a Palestinian poet. I look at myself, I have no problem. I look all right, and to some girls my gray hair might even be attractive. My eyeglasses are well made, my body temperature is precisely 37. My shirt is ironed and my shoes do not hurt. I have no problem. My hands are not cuffed, my tongue has not been silenced yet. I have not, so far, been sentenced. And I have not been fired from my work. I'm allowed to visit my relatives in jail. I'm allowed to visit some of their graves in some countries. I have no problem. I'm not shocked that my friend has grown a horn on his head. I like his cleverness in hiding the obvious tail under his clothes. I like his calm pause. He might kill me, but I shall forgive him, for he is my friend. He can hurt me every now and then, I have no problem. The smile of the TV anchor does not make me ill anymore, and I've got used to the khaki stopping me my colors night and day. That is why I keep my identification papers with me, even at the swimming pool. I have no problem. Yesterday my dreams took the night train, and I did not know how to say goodbye to them. I heard the train had crashed in a barren valley. Only the driver survived. I thanked God and took it easy, for I have small nightmares that I hope will develop into great dreams. I have no problem. I look at myself from the day I was born till now. In my despair, I remember that there is life after death. There is life after death, and I have no problem. But I ask, oh my God, is there life before death? I want you to remember that 20% of the population in what is called Israel are Arab citizens, and this is basically written by a Palestinian, a person who is also an Arab citizen, and as it pointed out, they have to have their ID card with them at all times. Their cars, those who have the luxury of owning a car, have a separate and different license plate, because people want to know immediately whether or not the car that's driving is driven by an Israeli or by a Palestinian, because almost all of the roads and any of the good roads in Israel or the West Bank are only allowed to be driven by Israeli Jews. And I'm not jesting here. Otherwise, you have to have a special certificate, a special license plate, and those are under rare circumstances. Each of the settlements, and now I think there's at least over 300, some say up to 500 settlements, and settlements can be as large as 30 to 50,000 people in what they call one settlement. And that can be either in the state of Israel or in what we're calling the West Bank, and previously to 2005 in Gaza as well. And so there are settlements with 30,000, 50,000 Israeli Jews in the West Bank. And no Arab is allowed unless under special circumstances. And each of those settlements has freeway-like roads going directly to Jerusalem and any of the main cities of Israel. And not only can a Palestinian or an Arab Israeli not use that freeway or that road, they can't even cross it. And I'll let Maggie give you an example of what I mean by that, perhaps, or some of the things she's seen similar to that for the citizen of an Arab.
Yeah, inside... what is now the state of Israel, there are, just an example, there are people that live in some of the Palestinian Arab towns, and if they want to add on to their house, they're not given building permits. And in fact, Jonathan Cook, who's a British journalist that lives in Nazareth, reports that there are 40,000 demolition permits now pending against the homes of Palestinian citizens of Israel. Inside the occupied West Bank, there are checkpoints between all of the Palestinian communities, multiple checkpoints. I used to volunteer in Ramallah and would have to go through at least two checkpoints to go from Beit Sahur to Ramallah, which is probably distance-wise equivalent of going from Sacramento to Davis, maybe a little bit farther. And at the military checkpoints, people can be pulled out of their cars searched, they can be not allowed through. I actually came through a checkpoint one time late at night, and I was in a collective taxi, which is a transportation form they have, and going the other direction, there was a small sedan, and the hood was up and the trunk was up and the doors were open, and I thought, oh my, they're having car trouble. But then I looked just behind the car and I saw four young Palestinian men with their hands behind their backs and an Israeli soldier with a machine gun. And what I realized was that the soldier could kill every one of them and nothing would happen. And that's a daily occurrence in what people live with in the West Bank. We were walking in towns in the West Bank one afternoon in the small town of Haaretz, just talking to people in the town, and all of a sudden everybody disappeared from the streets. This is a Palestinian community. And we looked up the street and these two Israeli vehicles, a Humvee and another military vehicle, entered the town and they started driving up and down the streets. And it's like, what? You know, it was an invasion, really. And then some of the boys in the town did throw rocks at them, but I don't know. I mean, if military vehicles were coming up and down my street and they did it every night, I think I would probably throw rocks at them too. So I do want to mention before we go back and talk a little bit about more about our campaign that the Geneva Accords do give occupied people the right to resist. And the Palestinians are occupied people, and they do have, under the Geneva Protocols, the right even to armed resistance. That said, what Palestinians are resisting with now is not armed resistance. They are far out, you know, the Israeli military is huge. It's the fourth or fifth most powerful in the world, and the Palestinians don't have, effectively have no military. They don't have planes, they don't have ships, they don't have the armored vehicles. They may have some guns, but I mean it's nothing compared to the Israeli military. So to go back to the boycott, divestment, sanctions movement, this is an effective non-violent campaign that that Palestinians have waged very effectively now. And what's happened is that it is really on the radar of Israel and the Israel lobby in this country. And there's really an effort to shut it down. And part of what we're experiencing in Davis is that resistance. And I think, it's one thing to say that, but then one really needs to look at what that is. And what we're finding in Davis is there are segments of the population who are clinging to an apartheid vision of Israel. They feel that Israel must continue to be an apartheid state, must be a state where one religious group has supremacy and is given more access to the land and more privileges and more rights than another religious group. And it's really, I think, to most Americans, it's offensive to even think of that. I mean, to think, oh, why should one religious group get primacy over another? And that's really what we're talking about, is the situation today. And I just want to point out a couple things that people say, oh, Israel is the only democracy in the Middle East, which first of all isn't true. I mean, Lebanon is also a democracy. But secondly, it's the kind of democracy that this country was in the late 1700s. And if you remember, the four women of us in this little studio here were not allowed to vote. Native Americans, I think, were considered to be a quarter person. Of course, slaves weren't allowed to vote. So, I mean, that's the kind of democracy that we're talking about. At least this country had a constitution, which Israel doesn't, because I think if it did, it would be much more difficult for it to maintain what it maintains now. But that's not really, there are certainly positive American values, although I think our country is engaged in doing a tremendous amount of damage around the world. But I think the values of democracy, which is also the values that we're trying to stand up for here in the co-op, those are important. And those are grounded in treating all people equally, and that you don't give primacy to a racial group, an ethnic group, or a religious group, or a gender group. So that's that's the situation. I want to talk
suggest to you, Maggie, because you had mentioned that one of the things you're really facing now with the Davis Food Co-op is an issue of what we would call democracy. And also, quote, as a friend of mine once said, democracy is merely just the majority rule. And you can have that anywhere, but a republic is one where there's agreed upon processes, and those processes or those laws or those rules have precedence. And in the case of the Davis Co-op, it was our understanding that there were precedences, and there was a process, and the process required that you get 5% of the signatures needed, and you could put on a ballot. And remember that this ballot was, it's the signatures only said, okay, we're requesting the right to put on the spring ballot for the shareholders to then vote. And please remember also that the decision of the vote was still going to be a recommendation. So it wasn't as if the board didn't actually have a decision-making power then. So what's in question here to some extent or to a large extent now is the idea of what is a democracy, or what is a democratic process, or what is the value of a democratic process in the Davis Food Co-op, when in actuality they're beginning to make us wonder if other things don't supersede that. I mean, are there economic factors that we're only partially privy to that is of concern here? Are there possible, we have heard that there are possibilities that they have been informed that there would be full-flung boycotts of the Davis Co-op if this were to be allowed on the ballot, or if it were definitely to pass? And this amazes me again, because there still is the right of the board to make the final decision. So I was going to suggest and ask Maggie if she could give you the phone numbers, because I think it's important that a couple times this evening we ask for your assistance with regard to letting individuals know how we stand on this issue.
And we do have the phone numbers. Here we go.
Very good.
Yes.
A little pitter-patter going on here at the same time.
Yeah.
Go for it, Maggie.
So, yeah, we would like it for people to call the co-op, to call the president of the co-op, Steve Reynolds, and the co-op's general manager, Eric Stromberg, and to say that you are concerned about the threat to the co-op's democracy based on the board's actions. We're asking people to ask the co-op to disclose their legal opinion, and also, as Mary said, we're asking them to put this resolution on the ballot with a proviso that states there are conflicting legal opinions, and if it were to pass before it would be implemented, those legal issues would have to be completely resolved.
And before you give the phone number, I want to mention that the listeners, if they have, because I know sometimes it's one thing to listen to a program and then to remember all that you've heard, if you want to know the specifics again before you were to make that phone call, all you'd have to do is go on the internet to www.davis, that's D-A-V-I-S, B-D-S dot org. That was again www.davisbds, boycott, divest, and sanction dot org. And the information that we've been giving to you, for example, the resolution and what's happened up to this point and what we need you to do, is outlined on that website. But for the moment, those of you who may have a pen handy, I'd like Maggie to go ahead and give you those two names and the phone numbers again that you can dial.
So you can reach the co-op by dialing 7585941. The co-op's contact information is all on their website, including all of the emails of all of the board members, and that's davisfoodcoop.org, I think. You can Google Davis Food Co-op. I'm sorry, I don't have the website. Davis Food Co-op. And you can reach president, Steve Reynolds, by calling 530-297-5030. Now, I want to just take a moment here to talk about activism around, I think 1 minute. Go ahead.
If I could just break in here to thank our underwriters for the past hour. We thank OMSOFT Technologies, serving the KVMR listening area with internet solutions for home and office, including DSL, roaming dial-up access, domain name registration, secure transaction services, and technical support. Information can be found at OMSOFT.com. OMSOFT, the enlightened internet solution. And I want to remind everybody that this is the Women's Show. This is KVMR FM 89.5 in Nevada City. And we are in the studio with Mary Wynn from Teach Peace in Davis and Maggie Coulter from Sacramento Peace Action. So thanks, Mary.
I just want to give an unsolicited input for the Davis Community Network. They do my internet service, and they're great. If you have a problem, you can call them, and which don't have problems often, but if you have a question or a problem, you can call them, and there's always somebody there, so they're great. And I just want to mention again, this coming week we are going to be showing the film, The Iron Wall, February 25th. That is on our website, davisbds.org. Also want to mention March 4th at 7 p.m., Breaking the Silence, which is an Israeli peace group of soldiers who are telling the truth about what it's like to be a soldier and what they've done to Palestinians in the occupied territories, are going to be doing a presentation in Davis. This is March 4th, 7 p.m. at 2661 Portage Bay Avenue. That's the Village Homes Community Center in Davis. And then, again, of course, March 7th, we will have the community debate about the BDS issue at the Veterans Memorial. The issue of peace activism is really important. I met, and I know Mary met, and she can talk about a lot of Israelis, Jewish Israelis, who are working, who do not agree with the occupation, who do not agree with the need for an apartheid state in Israel, who believe that people, regardless of their religion or their ethnicity or their backgrounds, that they should be treated equally. There are a lot of those groups out there, and I had the privilege of meeting with and working with a number of them. One of the groups is Anarchists Against the Wall, young Israelis who come into the West Bank and go to the demonstrations at which Palestinians, these are peaceful demonstrations. Again, the Palestinians are not armed. They do not have the weaponry of the Israeli military. And the anarchists go in and they demonstrate with the Palestinians and they speak in Hebrew to the Israeli soldiers. They're an incredible group. Another group is Masim Watch, which are Israeli women primarily, but not exclusively, who monitor the checkpoints between the West Bank and Israel and report human rights violations and try to intercede when they can, when soldiers are preventing people who have work permits or whatever from coming in or abusing people in other ways. That's a very courageous group. New Profile is another group started also by Israeli women. We actually heard an Israeli woman activist talk a couple weeks ago, and she said she was just talking about women, and she said, well, I mean activists, but you know, they're women, so I mean, of course they're activists. But I'm not saying that the Israeli men aren't doing anything, because we know they are, but I'm just saying those Israeli women, some of the Jewish Israeli women are doing a lot. And so New Profile is another group, tries to educate people about militarism. Their goal is to end the militarism of Israeli society. We need a new profile group here in the United States. Great folks. And then there are some just powerful individuals that I met, and I just want to mention a couple of them. The International Solidarity Movement is an organization which works in with Palestinians, again, side by side in helping them try to protect their lands. And that was co-founded by an Israeli Jewish woman who's very active in that, who's been arrested several times, who's took the boat to Gaza, very courageous woman. And the Palestine Solidarity Project, another, it's a community-based project in a community that is under daily, nightly siege by the Israeli military. This community, Beit Omar, which is not too far from where I lived, surrounded on three sides by settlements and roads, and then the Israelis put a huge military tower at the entrance of the community, and nightly the soldiers go into the community and taunt the young people. I mean, just again, picture your own neighborhood with soldiers coming in every night. So in that community is a courageous American Jewish woman who actually got Israeli citizenship and works there trying to assist the Palestinians in their struggle to end the occupation. So there's a lot of that kind of activism going on. As I said, the boycott, divestment, sanctions movement is supported by Jewish Israelis as well as Jews in this country and around the world, as well as other activists, of course. And I'll let Mary had some contact with some other groups, too, if you want to mention those.
Well, one of the groups that I want to mention is Breaking the Silence. When we were in Jerusalem, as a matter of fact, there was an opportunity to meet with these, and in this particular case, it was young men. Breaking the Silence is an organization of veteran Israeli soldiers that collect testimonies from soldiers who served in the occupied territories, not only during the Second Intifada, but they're gathering information from soldiers even today who are, because one thing you may not know, and again, if I get this a little bit off, Maggie, please correct me, but if you are a young man or woman in Israel today and earlier, you are required to serve, is it 2 or 3 years? I think it's 2 or 3.
I think the basic is two.
Two? Yeah. 2 years. 2 years in the military. So it's the mandated service. And so these young men come oftentimes right out of high school and women, and they go into the what they call the IDF. And what these young men and women are doing is they're actually serving their time, coming out of the service, and then actually beginning to rethink what they did when they were soldiers in the West Bank or in or around Gaza and in Israel. Because one thing you'll find if you go to visit Israel is the minute you arrive, you will see soldiers everywhere. It's got to be one of the
soldiers with guns.
Oh yeah, no. I think they're the equivalent of the M16.
Yeah, with machine guns.
So they all have machine guns, and they are everywhere you look. I mean, if you want a sense of, well, no, I don't want to say it's security because it's really not, but in the sense that apparently not everybody feels secure enough, even with the machine guns, even though no one around them has any weaponry even comparable or slightly comparable. But the point is these young individuals go in after having been, I don't want to say indoctrinated, but probably close to it, receiving a history similar to the history that I received growing up and students today receive, which is basically what others want us to hear. And so they go out and they serve their time. And but here's what I want to share with you. When these young men took me to South Hebron, and they took 21 other individuals along with me to South Hebron, and what they do is they take you to where they actually served. So they aren't talking about a place they weren't at. They're talking about the place that they were at. And they were telling us stories. For example, they pointed out, here's about where the keys were collected. And I thought, you know, what do they mean by the keys? Well, what they were saying is that, for example, as I said before, an Arab is not allowed to cross a road that has been deemed Jewish, travel only. And if they try to cross the road, and I don't mean go on the road, I mean just try to cross the road, well, then the keys are taken away from them. And he was pointing out that for the first time, you know, they may take the keys. And then the Arab has learned or learns quickly that, well, then I'll carry a second set of keys. And so then when the Israeli leaves, then they use their second set to get across the road. Now, why do they want to get across the road? And that's because these roads are between the villages. They've made a point to put the settlements between each of the villages of the Palestinians so that, in essence, they can't get, I shouldn't even say from village to village, they can't even necessarily get from one side of the town to the other. And Maggie can talk more about that when we get into Jerusalem itself. So they were showing me where these where these keys might be kept. And then they said that, well, that's not enough because, you know, we find out that they've got a second set. We take that. And then we learn that what we need to do, we're new at this, is that we go in and we take the battery cord. I guess it's a battery
cable.
Yeah. Thank you. And we rip that out of the car. Well, now, you know, under no circumstances can they, you know, take the car. And then they'll impound the car if need be. So what happens is that they can't even take the fruit they've grown from one side of the road to the other, to the village, where they can sell the fruit so they can have a livelihood. I mean, this is the type of story. And I want to tell you one more before I pass it over to Maggie, and it's because it'll also give me an opportunity to share with you another piece that was written, in this case, by an Israeli young woman. This is the story of the Arab who died in the fire. And first I want to read the story, and then I'll tell you how it applies. When the fire seized his body, it didn't happen by slow degrees. No bust of heat to begin with, no stifling billow of smoke, no prospect of a room next door where one could escape. The fire took him all at once. Such a thing hath not its likeness. It peeled away his clothing, seethed upon his flesh. The first casualties were the nerves of the skin. Then the hair fell prey to the fire. God, they're burning us, he screamed. That's all he could manage in self-defense. The flesh was blazing along with the planks of the shed, which sustained the fire in the primary phase, the shed that he had been locked in. By that point, his mental faculties were gone. The firebrand of the flesh paralyzed any senses of a future, the memories of his family, the links to his childhood. He was shrieking, no longer constrained by reason. By now, all the bonds of family were broken. He did not seek vengeance, redemption, the dawn of a new day. All he wanted was to stop burning, but his own body kept feeding the blaze. As if he were bound and laid on the altar, though he wasn't thinking about that either. He went on burning by the sheer force of his body, flesh and fat and sinews, and he kept on burning. From his throat issued inhuman voices, since many human functions had already ceased, except for the pain transmitted in electrical pulses along neural pathways to the pain receptors in the brain. All of this lasted no more than a single day. And it's a good thing he breathed his last when he did, because he deserved to rest. This poem was written about a Palestinian day worker from the occupied territories, which a Jew had nailed shut the door of the warehouse where he was sleeping so he couldn't get out when it was set on fire. This young woman wrote this because she understood the fear he felt before he was saved by death. And what made me think of this? Because breaking the silence, they told me about how a young family of Palestinians who were in a tent, the settlers had come and set the tent on fire. Now, had the Palestinians not awoken, they would have been drenched and literally burned alive. And that's the kind of thing that's taking place in the West Bank, as well as in Israel proper. To be an Arab in that area is a life-threatening reality. Now, this is the reason why I am so proud of the young men and women of Breaking the Silence, which we have one visiting us on March 4th in Davis, because they have served their time. And by the way, for a young Israeli soldier to have come out and begin to tell the stories, all you have to do is go on to Google Breaking the Silence, and you will find the link for their website. There are films, there are testimonials, individual stories of what, and they only speak of what they took part in, and there are now soldiers who have spoken out about what they did in Gaza that 3 weeks. Now, the young woman who is going to speak is going to speak on March 4th at 7 o'clock. If you look up again on the website for teachpeace.com or you look up on the Davis BDS website, you'll find the information March 4th, 7 p.m. at the Village Homes Community Center. That's 2661 Portage Avenue. That's 2661. But most importantly, simply go to either teachpeace.com or davisbds.org.
Wow, those are, I haven't actually heard Mary tell these stories before, so it's pretty heart-wrenching to hear that and to imagine what that was like. I want to just come back to the boycott campaign again. I think we feel that this is a very viable tool, and one of the issues that has been raised in Davis, and I'll talk a little bit more about boycott and products and that kind of thing in a minute, but is by some of the folks who would like to, you know, speak about Palestinian rights, but they can't quite get their mind wrapped around the right of return. And it's interesting, Mary and I heard, which is the right of Palestinian refugees who were kicked out in 47, 48 to come back to their homes and lands, those Palestinians and their children and their descendants. Mary and I heard a powerful woman speak in Berkeley a couple weeks ago, Dalit Baum, who's with the website whoprofits.org, another Israeli woman. She and some other women founded this website, and I encourage people to go on it. And it looks at the companies that are initially based in the West, or in the settlements, and profiting from the settlements. And what they found over time was that really the entire Israeli economy is involved with the illegal settlements. So while they thought, oh, we can take this product or that product and separate them from the rest of the economy, what they found is they couldn't really do that. I mean, the Israeli banks and big companies and the service industries and the fast food and the stores and everything really was linked to the settlement economy. And just to point out again that our listeners here, along with Mary and I, are also linked to the settlement economy, because $3 billion of our tax money goes every year to support the illegal Israeli occupation of the West Bank and Gaza, as well as other violations, Israel's violations of human rights and refusal to pay attention to international law. Now, as a consumer, one of the things that you can do is to start looking at where products come from. Not all products from Israel are labeled as that they come from Israel, but some of them are. The barcode, what is it? I think it's,
do you know, I don't know exactly what it
is. I forgot what it is. Actually, look, the most effective thing to do is look at where the product comes from. But, for example, in the co-op in Davis, there's Israeli feta, which says it's a product of the U.S. There's Israeli couscous, I believe it says the same thing, but they're actually coming from Israel. So we don't have we have a list of products that the co-op sells, which include products of the Olam Industries, which makes couscous and hand creams, products of Sandspire Company that makes chocolates, Dead Sea Warehouse. Ahava is the co-op doesn't sell Ahava, but Ahava is a product around which Code Pink has organized a national boycott. It's made in the illegal settlements. And then the co-op also carries a Golan, Moscato Golan, Stone Creek Red, and another wine that are made in Israel. So there are shoes, Noat shoes. The co-op doesn't sell those, but they're sold elsewhere in Davis. And there are other products. One website that's maintaining a pretty good list of products is the Bay Area Campaign to Boycott Israeli Apartheid, BACBIA.org. And they're actually collecting products, stories about products, reports about products being sold in the Bay Area. And we're also interested in that information, so we welcome people to go on to our website, davisbds.org, and send us products that you found in local stores. We'll take Grass Valley products and Nevada City products and Davis products and Woodland products and Sacramento products. So you can, as you're out shopping, and you should always check and see where the product comes from, frankly. It could, because it's important to buy local products. Of course, we know that, particularly produce. It's interesting, when I was living in the West Bank, I was talking to some people that were trying to do some sustainable farming, and they said, when Israel sells produce to Europe, it's essentially selling water to Europe, because that's what it takes to make that produce. And water is extremely scarce in Israel and Palestine, and in fact, it's inequitably used. We haven't even talked about the apartheid wall that Israel's built into the West Bank, most of which is built on West Bank land. And that wall, one of the purposes of it is to take control of the water that's in the West Bank. The water is scarce, and the Israelis are trying to control it. So, for example, in Bethlehem, the Israeli military has taken over the Bethlehem water supply, and then they sell the water back to the Palestinians in Bethlehem through the Makrot private water company. Want to point out that this company I mentioned, Olin Industries, actually, I think it's now been half bought out by Nestle's, who's certainly got quite a rap sheet as far as progressive community goes. So we can, that information again is on our website. I do want to mention again, March 7th, we're having a community debate in Davis with Omar Barghouti, who is a co-founder of the boycott movement, and Zev Moaz, who is a Israeli professor at UC Davis, and that's at the Vets Memorial in Davis on March 7th.
Maggie and Mary, are you open to taking some phone calls now?
Sure.
Oh, definitely.
So if someone wants to give us a call, it's 1-800. They covered up my sign up there. 1-800-355-5867. Or 530-265-9555. And hey, we have a call.
We have silence.
We have silence.
Say something about that.
You can only have dead air on Saturday night.
These are the heavenly angels. Take away that woeful shadow dancing on your wall. Take to the skies of peace, oh friends of peace, of the one great spirit. Get ready for my bugle call of peace. Peace, peace, peace. I can hear the bugle sound.
Caller, you should be live on the air.
Yeah. I just want to thank those two ladies for bringing something to people's attention that I've been aware of for years, and I've already been boycotting those things. A quick question. What was that, place on the Internet at the BAC? Was it BIA.org?
I believe that's right. I think it's the Bay Area Committee to Boycott Israeli Apartheid. So try BACBIA.org or BACBI.org.
Excellent. And once again, thank you, ladies. It's about time somebody has talked about this.
Thank you.
You have a good day.
Thank you.
Do we have another caller? Or? No. It's interesting, the song that you were just playing, the bugle call for peace, and we hear peace talked about a lot. And
we do have another.
Oh, okay, we'll take that, and I'll come back to that thought.
Caller, you're on the air.
Hello, this is Woody from Alta. I've been a member for 25 years. I love this show, and I really love it tonight.
Oh, thank you.
And tell them gals, right on.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Right.
Right on, gals.
Yeah, I love that. Thanks a million.
Okay, we have another call.
Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, I just want to also thank the speakers and your guest. As an American Jew, I've been boycotting Israeli products for years, and I'm just so happy to hear that there's large organizations getting together and doing this. And I would hope that our co-op here gets on board as well. And I just really appreciate your articulate approach to talking about the deep, deep history. There's a lot of emotion and just horror. I have friends and Palestinians and, you know, all types of people, but I just want to thank you for how articulate and clearly you've spoken tonight. So thank you for doing that.
Thank you very much.
All right. Good.
Thanks. Have a good night.
Caller, you are on the air.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead.
Hi.
Hi.
Yes,
hi.
I was wondering if the gals had done any studying about the Israeli monetary system, and which is kind of at the other end of the spectrum of influence. You know, you have your boycotting on one end, direct action through our consumer habits and whatnot, but also the monetary system and the central banking and the way it operates kind of ties in with a hierarchical power structure that kind of ties Israel in with European banking and our Federal Reserve system and the whole how things get funded on a top-down level. And I was just wondering if I was just reading under Stanley Fisher. He's the current governor of the Bank of Israel, and he was Ben Bernanke's PhD thesis advisor. And when you start to look at all the ties, I mean, it kind of gets a little mind-boggling about the power structure of the monetary system and how it actually influences political policy.
So, Maggie, have you guys thought about that?
Well, actually, I'd just like to make a couple comments on what the other caller said. I wanted to be sure to mention Jewish Voice for Peace, which is an organization in the United States. The executive director is actually a woman that I met over the internet when we were both. She was in the Beersheba in the desert, and I was in the West Bank. We didn't connect there, but they are doing an incredible amount, really. And they've got a great website called Muzzle Watch, where they're out working on issues like ours, where parts of the community are trying to stifle debate and stifle discussion. There was actually a workshop in Davis at one of the synagogues about a couple weeks ago, and they were talking about the new anti-Semitism being the boycott campaign. And in the course of that talk, they put up names of people who they consider anti-Semitic. Anna Baltzer, who's a incredible young Jewish American woman, Barbara Lubin, who's an older Jewish American woman, also incredible, and people like Ian Pape, who's a Jewish Israeli professor, and all of our friends they were, of course, putting up there. But, you know, it's so important, I think, for people to realize how many people are really speaking out about this. And again, I would send people to the Jewish Voice for Peace website and the Muzzle Watch website also for information. Regarding the monetary system, I hate to say it, but that's beyond my expertise. Maybe Mary knows something about it. I do know one thing, which is that the U.S. campaign to end the occupation, and that's another good resources. The website is endtheoccupation.org. They have a number of people working on a number of aspects of BDS, and I know that there have been groups working on bonds, Israel bonds. So that's a resource for that. Then again, also who profits.
Well, what I would like to suggest to the caller, and is the caller still on?
Oh, yeah,
okay,
I'm here.
I'm sorry, what's your first name?
My name is Steve.
Steve, hi, this is Mary Wynn.
Hi, Mary.
What I would suggest is if you go to the teachpeace.com website and simply put in Federal Reserve, I wouldn't be surprised that you would find a number of articles about the Federal Reserve And most likely there will be some connection with the Israeli monetary system, as you've mentioned, because I know this is a very large, complicated, phenomenal area, and I think you've probably read the book. What is that island? Now I'm going to
Creature from Jekyll Island.
Yes, Creature from Jekyll Island. I mean, that's
thank you,
that's,
caller.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, thank you so much. Yes, it's sometimes a little game with me.
Well, yeah, I mean, but, I just when I heard, I think it was Maggie said. That Britain, when she was giving her background information,
yes, right.
She said that Britain got out of the empire business, and I don't really think they did. I think they just went covert.
Yeah, okay.
Instead of being overt,
good,
and
good point.
They just went back into the banking scenario, yeah. And just you know, the famous quote from Miriam Shell Rothschild in the 1800s, he said, "Permit me to issue and control the currency of a nation, and I care not who makes its laws." So there became a banking brotherhood, and if you just type in, go to Wikipedia and type in Stanley Fischer, F-I-S-C-H-E-R, and he's the current governor of the Bank of Israel, and he has no one else he answers to. He sets all the monetary policy, unlike here, at least Ben Bernanke has some checks and balances, because they're all bankers.
Well, one of the things I want to make sure we don't do is sort of take too much away from what short time we have, Steve, to talk
about
this other issue. But I appreciate what you're saying very much. And again, I hear your call and teachpeace.com. You'll find additional articles, I think, that will ring very true to you. So please take a moment to give them a try as well. And I will look up Fisher. And thank you very much for your call.
Sounds good. Top down and bottom up.
Actually, before you hang up, if this is something you're interested in working on, there are people that are looking into this, and you know, contact us through our website, and maybe we can get you plugged in with some other folks that are, you know, working on that particular aspect.
Sure. I'll send you an email and just make you aware that I'm interested in this.
Great. Thank you very much.
Sure. Okay.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Well, I had a question. This is Peggy. I had read somewhere that there's quite a few conscientious objectors, Israeli soldiers, who've gone to prison instead of serving.
Yes. Yeah. There is a refusenik movement, and there also are high school students, and I can't pronounce what they're called, but we heard some of them speak when I was living in the West Bank. I actually was affiliated with a center called the Alternative Information Center, which is another great source for news. It's called www.alternativenews.org. People can Google that. Anyway, the Alternative Information Center has a office in Beit Sahur, which is in the West Bank, and then one in Jerusalem, and it's a joint Israeli-Palestinian project. So one evening we had some of these young high school, they're actually all women again, but the men are doing it too. anyway, they were talking about that, about what led them to the decision not to go into the military, and actually the price they were paying for,
yes,
too, because it's really, even though apparently now only actually half the young people actually do serve in the military, still it's pretty much expected, and it's there's a lot of camaraderie around it, and so if you don't go, you're kind of left out of that. You lose certain benefits, job benefits, and other benefits, and people get shunned by their friends and family. So these people are young people are really very courageous in doing this, as are people in this country. And I want to point out the Courage to Resist is a website about young people or people in the military in this country, not just young people, who are speaking out in the military, trying to get out. And I think it's difficult here, and I'm sure it's extremely difficult in the Israeli military when you want to try to get out.
Thank you.
So
we have
more callers. Okay, announcements.
We have upcoming show announcements.
Okay, great.
Terrific.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible but that the best rock song of the 50s is a song warning the listener of the grave dangers posed by rock and roll? It's a song you probably never heard, but you can hear it, and others like it, if you set the stereo afire on the Queen Bee's Blues Hour on March 7th.
Wednesday at noon, civilization is in trouble. Should we care? Is it worth saving, or should we hasten its decline? Join guest host John Fletcher and his guest writer Derek Jensen as they discuss the inevitable collapse of civilization and why it is not a bad thing, next Wednesday on Rebel Rousing at high noon.
Sunday afternoon at 5, Derek Trucks got his first guitar at age 9, started jamming around town at age 10, and had shared the stage with Bob Dylan, the Allman Brothers Band, and Buddy Guy by the age of 12. Tune in for this week's Sunday Showcase from 5 to 7 p.m. as Barbara Lowell and Paul Barberi take you on a soul-stirring improvisational adventure with the Derek Trucks Band that blurs the lines between blues, jazz, rock, soul, and world music. That's Sunday, 5 to 7 p.m.
KVMR joins dozens of other community radio stations nationwide for the 13th Annual National Homelessness Marathon, a discussion featuring the homeless, the poor, and their advocates, this year on the streets of Detroit, Michigan. This poignant overnight broadcast will be broadcast live from Detroit Tuesday night, 10 p.m., until Wednesday morning, 4 a.m.
This Saturday night on Diamonds and Rust is the music of Kate Wolfe. Host Laura Miller presents rare recordings, interviews, and the musical treasures left behind by the late California singer-songwriter. That's this Saturday, 6 to 8.
On the next edition of The Other Side, Tuesday from 8 till 10 p.m., an Other Side special, Back to the Roots, Episode 3. This final classic Other Side episode will be taking a look and listen back to the roots of where it all began. Trust me, it'll be a fun time for all. So tune in for a fun night full of rediscovery and vintage Other Side goofiness. For more information, check out theotherside.biz.
Hey, the good news is back with a brand new episode this Thursday from 12 noon to 1 p.m. with guest co-host PB&J. Have some good news of your own to share? Just give us a call during the show and drop an email beforehand to goodnews@kvmr.org. That's the Good News Hour this Thursday from noon to 12.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, guys. So, for those of you who may just be tuning in, this is the Women's Show, and we're in the studio this evening with Maggie Coulter from SAC Peace Action and Mary Wynn from Teach Peace in Davis, and we're talking about the Palestinian-Israeli, the occupation of Palestine by the Israelis. So.
And the phone number in the studio is 265-9555 or 1-800-355-5867. That's 1-800-355-KVMR.
And we welcome your questions, so give us a call.
I just want to mention a couple books by women, since we're on the Women's Show. I mentioned before Anna Baltzer, who's a young Jewish-American woman, terrific. She's written a book called Witness in Palestine, A Jewish-American Woman in the Occupied Territories, and her website is annainthemiddleeast.org. I also wanted to mention Susan Nathan is somewhat older than Anna. She went to Israel in her late 50s. She was from Britain and grew up in South Africa. She was Jewish. She entered Israel under the, quote, law of return, in which Israel allows Jews from anywhere around the world, regardless of what connection they might have to Palestine, to move there, to immigrate to Israel. Anyway, Susan Nathan came to Israel to live, didn't know much about the Palestinians, but discovered them and has written an incredible book about what it's like to live inside the State of Israel as a Palestinian. It's called The Other Side of Israel. Susan Nathan is her name. I interviewed her when we were in the West Bank and in Israel, and she's terrific. So that's a book I'd highly recommend. So those two women, Anna Baltzer.
How do you spell her last name, Susan Nathan?
N-A-T-H-A-N,
I'm
Susan
jealous.
Nathan. And then I also wanted to mention Radha Carmi, who's written Searching for Fatima. Radha Carmi, G-H-A-D-A-K-A-R-M-I, is a Palestinian woman. And her book, Searching for Fatima, is about what happened in 47-48. And then a more recent book is Married to Another Man, which is also about the Palestinian history and what's going on today. So I would recommend those three books. There are many, many good books. Jonathan Cook lists a number of books on his website, jkcook.com. Israelbook.net. There are a number of great books written by Israeli academics. Ian Pape's The Ethnic Cleansing of Palestine is one of those. And you can get other books on Cook's website. There are a lot of resources out there, and as Mary said on the way up here, there's no need to be uninformed about this.
That's one thing I've been amazed at since I got back from Gaza, and I imagine you have as well, Maggie, the amount of visuals that you can get. For example, if you want to have an idea of what did happen during those 3 weeks from December 27th to January 16th, where the siege has been taking place for, 40, 60 years now? But in essence, the three-week horrendous attack on Gaza, all you have to do is simply put in Gaza, December 27th, 2008, or put in Gaza in Google, and you'll actually get YouTube videos that, you know, clips of and films of what actually has taken place and is taking place today. So for those of you that are more visual, the internet provides the actual films, and it's as if you're there when you're so close to your own screen to observe. And those of you that are more auditory or enjoy the slow pace of reading or the individual choice of reading, then the books that Maggie mentioned to you, whether it's factual information you're going for or it's the novel that sort of puts the mind, soul, and body in place. Earlier we had been talking about different organizations, and that's one of the things that when I came back from Gaza that I think I mistakenly didn't make clear enough when I gave one of my presentations back in Davis. I was awed by the peace movement, by the Israelis who are actually working towards peace, and I don't think I adequately conveyed that in the particular presentation that I gave. And another group that I wanted to mention that we spent the day with and that was actually in Nablus, which is sort of northeast of Jerusalem, and I should say of Tel Aviv, and that's the group called Yesh Din. That's YESHDIN, and this is a group, and in this case it was two women who went with us, spent the day with us in the West Bank. This is a group of individuals who actually go into the West Bank and or areas in Israel and basically report on what has taken place that has been what you or I would consider perhaps inhumane treatment or inappropriate treatment of Palestinians. And it's interesting because when we were driving into the West Bank, and we naturally got off the Israeli roads and had to at some point go on to the roads in the West Bank that were actually typically for Arabs, the difference in the road was quite clear. You know, you went from, as I said before, what's almost like a freeway or a highway in the United States to a rocky road that you wish in some cases you had a four-wheel drive, of which not everybody obviously does. And when we were driving to the little outside of Nablus, these two older women, older meaning nearer to my age, one's name was Judith, and that's the equivalent of Judith here or Judy here, and Tammy, we met with a lawyer, a Palestinian young man, a very attractive young law lawyer who is going to travel with myself, and David Dionisi was with me at the time because we were going to be meeting up with the other 150 people in Cairo before we worked to get our way into Gaza. And we went to two different families that day. And the first family that we met up with was a Palestinian family, Monir. I feel so apologetic because I can't always pronounce names properly. It's Monneer, Jebrel, Jebrell. And again, I may have inappropriately pronounced the name, but we met with this Palestinian family, and they have a farm in the West Bank. And by the way, Judith and Tammy weren't supposed to be in the West Bank. It's pretty much illegal for Israelis to go into the West Bank because it was supposed to be very dangerous for them. And I assure you, it was far from dangerous. And the young Palestinian who had next to nothing, His wife and his, I think his mother or his mother, his, either his mother or his wife's mother lived with them. She was there, and they had their two children. And he immediately brought out, and I'm sure that Maggie found this to be the case, immediately brought out what appeared to be, it might be their fine china, but you know, I mean, beautiful little cups for all of us, and he made their wonderful, I think it's, what is it, a coffee or a tea, sort of a, their drink that they make. And, you know, it's customary that the minute of an individual arrives, you treat them as if they're a friend. And we all were served, and we had a lovely drink and then a little piece of pastry that they had. And then he went on to tell us, and what he was doing, and the lawyer who could, this young Palestinian lawyer was able to speak both Hebrew, as well, Hebrew, English, and Arabic. And so he was basically the translator, because the two women that were from Israel, from Tel Aviv, actually didn't speak Arabic. They were just starting to learn it. But they went there, and they were taking notes about what had occurred to this family. And they didn't rely solely on what they were told. They relied on visuals. The farmer had taken photographs of what had actually occurred, and that was some of his 500-year-old olive trees had been burned down, literally burned to the ground on each side of the farm, up on two hills, one on the right or on the left, in this case, from the direction I was standing, were two settlements. And settlers had come down, and now then there was a picture. You could see the settlers. You could see them lighting the flames. This farmer couldn't do anything but take photographs. And then you could see the IDF come down, and they were standing there protecting the settlers who were lighting the fire to these olive trees. Now, these pictures, if you are concerned about whether or not this is valid, they're on the teachpeace.com website. So you can find them there. So please do go and look. And their job that day, from Yeshdin, was to capture the information of what occurred and to document it, because they would take the case back to Jerusalem and take it through the court system. They took us to get one more house that day, and again, we were greeted once again. This house was a little bit nicer than the other, and it was on the other side of Nablus. And this was a woman with her three children. And what was interesting on this house, the first thing we saw were probably five or six stars of David, and the stars of David, I was used to from a historical perspective, meant something different. But here, what it basically was the settlers once again were attacking the Palestinians. I've been told that there's a caller on the line, so I just simply want to say, before I let the caller start, well, that it was very fascinating to learn the types of things that were going on to the Palestinian families. Go ahead.
Caller, you are live.
Yes, thank you. This is Julia Hunter-Blair, and I'm calling from Davis. Oh. And I've just been told about this program going on. Could I make a couple of announcements?
Sure.
One is, there's a very important community debate going to take place on March the 7th in Davis at the Veterans Memorial. The title is Achieving a Just Peace in Israel-Palestine. Is the Boycott, Divestment and Sanctions, BDS, campaign a help or hindrance? And we have two powerful guys speaking. I'm in support of the BDS campaign.
We've been talking about this all evening.
Oh, good. Okay. Yes. I'll let that one go.
Okay.
All right. And the other thing is that at Village Homes in Davis, which is in Portage Bay, Dana Golan is talking on Breaking the Silence on Thursday, the 4th of March at 7.
Okay. Thank you very much, Julia, for re-announcing that for us. We appreciate
you know that
the
too,
call.
Do you?
Yes, I do.
You
and,
know
and,
everything.
Yeah, and, yeah. And we've been passing that information
oh, good.
On. So have a beautiful night.
You too. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
The one last thing I want to say about the settlers, and it was not only the Star of David that was on their homes that concerned us, the Palestinian settlers, not settlers, Palestinian Arabs whose home it was, they had painted the Star of David, but more importantly, they were shooting at the home. And there's a picture again at the teachpeace.com of a young girl. Her name in English is Angel. And she was showing us one of the remains on the home of where the bullet had hit. And the mother's was very much afraid to let her children play outside because the settlers come down and harass the children by shooting around the house. So, and then clearly painting the Star of David on there. So, again, these are examples, and Yesh Din is a courageous in the sense that these are Israeli women from Tel Aviv and near there and other places who go to three and four different sites in the West Bank. There's three or four different groups of them now, and they work with Palestinian and Israeli lawyers to take these cases before the court. So I appreciate very much the peace movement in Israel as well as Palestine. Maggie?
And I again want to encourage people to get involved. To of course, you should always contact your congressperson, and we know Congress is mostly in support of supporting Israel and the wars around the world, but still they need to hear our voices. And it's also really important that that people support what we're doing at the Davis Food Co-op, even if you don't live there, even if you belong to or shop at the co-op up here. Call them down there in Davis, 530-758-5941, and say, you know, I think democracy is really important in co-ops. I've learned about the boycott initiative you have there, and I think it's really important that you put that on the ballot. And, you know, there are safeguards. It's not going to be implemented if there are legality questions, but, you know, this is a over 640 people have signed a initiative to put this on the ballot, and that's more than the number necessary to qualify. So I really urge people to support that effort. And I want to point out, you know, we get out there in front of the Davis Co-op and we get called names and people get mad at us. And we have to remember in our history, that's what happens in civil rights movements. People that worked in the South to try to end the Jim Crow laws, they were killed, some of them. They had things thrown at them. They were names hurled at them. And there were white people in the South that were afraid of losing their power and afraid of what would happen if black people in the South were given equal rights. And black people in the South got equal rights. They're still struggling for that. I'm not saying it's equal, but white people in the South, their lives didn't fall apart. You know, they survived that. And the same thing is true in South Africa. White South Africans were terrified what would happen if you ended apartheid. I mean, they were a minority of people in South Africa, the white South Africans were. And apartheid ended, and those people survived. And what's going to happen with Jewish Israelis is they are going to survive. They are going to survive having the right of return, of honoring international law, of ending their persecution of the Palestinians and ending their apartheid state. And they're going to be able to move to a society that is more democratic, that has values and justice at its core. And they're going to survive that. And people are going to be fine there. I mean, we're all going to have to deal with global warming, but we won't deal with,
That's
you know, but
night.
But to the extent that we'll, but what I'm trying to say here is that, you know, people are fearful of these changes. And that's what we hear in Davis is this fear. And yet we heard this Israeli woman talk a couple weeks ago about the right of return. She's an Israeli Jewish woman, and she said, it's a right. Let's start with that. It's a right guaranteed by the United Nations. And she's not afraid of that right. You know, she doesn't have a need to maintain an apartheid state in Israel. And she welcomes the future. She's looking to the future when this persecution will stop, like it's, you know, at least the legal parts of it stopped in South Africa. So I want to acknowledge that people are afraid, and people are afraid of all kinds of change. You can see that in any form of civil rights movement and social justice movement. And you know, this is not simply about peace, because George Bush wanted peace.
This is about justice. I mean, you know, peace is a meaningless term unless you're going to talk about
justice
and honoring international law and international human rights law. And that's what we're about. We're about supporting, promoting, protecting human rights.
That's a really great summation. So
yes, and we want to thank you very much. One of the things that invigorates us, Peggy, is when we have an opportunity like this to share with others, and we know that others are listening as well as yourself and learning. And I want to thank my partner here tonight, because one of the things I really appreciate is that she provided an immense amount of information, and she kept it, you know, very straight and let it speak for itself. And I think that sometimes in controversial issues, not easy to do.
And the thing that I really appreciate from hearing your perspective is that both of you were actually there.
Yeah.
And you saw with your own eyes. And I, one of my favorite sheroes in the whole world is Starhawk. And when she goes, and you know, when she goes different places, and she tells me, she sends me the emails about what she did over there. And when she was in Egypt recently trying to get into Gaza, I read her every day. I just couldn't wait for her blog that day, you know. So she's an American, a Jewish woman who's working really hard for justice. I won't say peace, but justice in the Middle East. That's a good point. No justice, no peace.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. You know, that in March 20th, there's going to be a big demonstration in San Francisco and in Washington, D.C. to really get out there and say, you know, Obama,
wake up.
Hello. We voted for you because we thought you were going to get us out of these conflicts, not get us into more conflicts. So if you're interested in that and being part of that, I know SAC Peace Action is having buses that they're going down to San Francisco. And I personally really want to do that. So
that's on the SAC Peace website, www.sacpeace.org.
Yeah.
If I could just interject, there was when I was staying in Gaza, Obama was going to come and speak in Cairo, and I was writing an article for the Sacramento News and Review, and they wanted to know, what do people think about Obama? So I turned to this woman in the hotel, who was Palestinian, and I said, what do you think about Obama? And she said two things. First, that he was elected is a miracle. Second, is he going to be just words, like all the other presidents, or is he going to, you know, put actions behind his words that are really going to make change? And I told her, I said, I don't know. I really don't know. People were so excited in Palestine about him being elected. And I have to say to my fellow Americans that what Jim Hightower said was, we have to go to D.C. with Obama, and he is not doing what the people that want to end the war and want to end the war agenda, want to have health care, want to change this country to support the kind of human rights values that we've been talking about tonight. He hasn't done that yet, and he's not standing up for that in a way that is really meaningful at this point. So yes,
so we need
March
to speak
20th.
Out.
Yeah. We need to speak out and let our voices be heard. We can't be complacent. So.
Exactly.
Yeah. Anybody have any other questions or comments?
Well, I could, if you've got a minute, I could tell, 4 minutes or 4 seconds.
You got another poem?
I got one last poem that I think, to be very sincere, speaks to the heart of the Gaza situation. And of
She's
course,
looking through her papers.
Now the question.
There
here it is.
Here we go.
Yay.
Okay. For the children. In Gaza, children, you learn that the sky kills and that houses hurt. You learn that your blanket is smoke and breakfast is dirt. You learn that cars do somersaults, clothes turn red, friends become statues, bakers don't sell bread. You learn that the night is a gun, that toys burn, breath can stop, it could be your turn. You learn if they send you fire, they couldn't guess, not just the soldier dies, it's you and the rest. Nowhere to run, nowhere to go. 26 miles by 6 for 1.5 million people. Nowhere to hide in the home you know. You learn that death isn't life. The air isn't bread. The land is for all. You have the right to be not dead. The land is for all. You have the right to be not dead. The land is for all. You have the right to be not dead. I look forward to the day I can read a happy poem in this region of the world. And that day, I will be back on this show. 94, 72, whatever age I must be, I will return.
Thank you. We're going to end with Eliza Gilkison's song that we tried to play earlier, and thank you for listening.
Open your hearts to the paradise, to the peace of the heavenly angels. Take away that woeful shadow dancing on.